So, good evening, everyone. So, as I mentioned, I had already left home when I got the call that, you know, could I teach or help host or something this evening? So, I jotted down, I got a 3x5 card. Here we go. See how good this works. I have been teaching a class on the precepts recently. So, of course, that came to mind as something to speak about. So I'll probably speak about that for a bit. And we can also do some questions and answers and things like that. So to talk a little bit about the five precepts, first off, how many people have heard the five precepts before? Great. So just about everybody has. Okay. So I'll just do a quick review of them and then talk a little bit about how they work and how they can be useful and things like that. The first precept is I undertake the training to refrain from killing living beings. Straightforward. The second one, I undertake the training to refrain from taking that which is not given. That's kind of like stealing. But, you know, we have this word dana, which means giving, and it's, so actually the word there is adinna dana. And that adinna is that which is not, and then dana is given. So it's refraining from taking the things that have not been given, not been freely offered. The third one is undertake the training to refrain from misuse of sexuality and the senses. The fourth is to undertake the training to refrain from false speech. So that's speech that's untrue. In some places in the discourses or in the trainings, there's at least one discourse where the Buddha talks about some of the categories of wise speech. So it's speech that is false, divisive, harsh, or meaningless. And then the fifth precept is to undertake the training to refrain from intoxicants which lead to carelessness. And that one, the Pali word is sura meraya maja pamadatana. Just a nice, brief Pali word for you there. Sura is one type of alcoholic beverage. Meraya is another type of alcoholic beverage, and maja is the third type of alcoholic beverage there, so that you were to practice with. Nonetheless, there still can be some ambiguity there, as it's saying to absolutely refrain from all alcoholic beverages, or to refrain from them in a way that leads to heedlessness. Are we refraining from them because they lead to heedlessness, or in order to just refrain from using them in a way that leads us there? So, you notice that I phrased all of them as I undertake the training. You know, as my deepest understanding of the precepts is that they are, they're certainly not, I think it's hard for most of us who grew up in this country or in some kind of Judeo-Christian culture, there can be very much this sense of the commandments, right? And do this and thou shalt not and that kind of thing. The precepts, to me, function very differently from that. They're most effective when and most useful when they're not undertaken in that spirit of being rules of right and wrong. And instead, where they really gain their power, their real power to transform us, is when they're undertaken as opportunities to practice with the mind and heart, to really see more clearly what is the motivation here. They're not, I'm really convinced that they're not a political statement in any way, that the Buddha was not saying, these are actions that I like, these are actions that I don't like, so, you know, do practice these things and don't do these things. I really don't think that's what he was getting at all. I really think that what he was teaching here is what leads the mind to wholesome mind states, to being less and less troubled, more and more untroubled. Because the mind that is at ease is a mind that then goes to gladness and joy and happiness, and then from happiness on to concentration. And with concentration, on to the deepening of insight and wisdom. It's really interesting. Early in my practice, when I heard that the proximate cause of concentration was happiness, I was like, what? Are you kidding me? I thought that's supposed to be, you're supposed to grit your teeth. And I think I'd read maybe The Road Less Traveled by Scott Peck. And he talks in there about how, he listened to somebody and he really wanted to listen to it. And by the end of listening to this talk, he had a headache and he was sweating. And it's like, that is not the Buddhist path to concentration there. So, and of course, he's not a Buddhist. So it's quite the opposite of that. It's really about how do we get to this place of ease and what leads to that? So when it comes to this first precept about not killing, that's almost like an umbrella precept for the other four. It's really kind of about, because they all kind of have this spirit of non-harming. So what helps to, what leads to this spirit of non-harming? And where are ways that we fall into harming, into judging others? Or comparing others, or trying to fix others. The three roots of all unwholesome action, action of body, speech, and mind, are, you've heard these three before, the three poisons, the fires of greed, hatred, and delusion. Yeah. So when we're doing actions, are they motivated by any of this to some extent? In Buddhism, there's no external judge. In Judeo-Christian and in the major Western religions, there is this external deity who is going to judge each of us. And in Buddhism, the Buddha said that he wasn't creating a religion. It was more about simply what he discovered or uncovered is the truth of how we can get to freedom, right? What's going to lead us to freedom, to a true freedom? And what are ways to do that? My sense is that with the precepts, that they tend to be dismissed a bit. Tend not to be really paid attention to very closely. You know, so am I going to pay attention to the precepts or am I going to do the meditation? I want to do the concentration meditation. Give me the good stuff here. I want to go deep, you know. And yet, when the Buddha taught people, he started with sila. He started with, the most common thing that he started with was dana, generosity or giving. With lay people, he started with dana. Practicing that in different ways. And when people had really deepened in that way, then he moved on to sila, or ethical conduct. One major expression of sila is the precepts. And another major, if we look in the Noble Eightfold Path, which is another map, which I heard recently, we could call it the Noble Eightfold Path. We could call it the Eightfold Path of the Noble Ones. The Noble Ones being people who had attained in Theravada Buddhism to at least this first level of awakening. So, in other words, if you were a Noble One, someone who had really gotten there, had gotten to this stream entry level of awakening, then you would practice with this Eightfold Path. And that path is constituted of sila, or ethical conduct, samadhi, or concentration, the meditation practices, the deepening of meditation. And then the third is wisdom. So sila, samadhi, and panya. So how do we work with the precepts? How do we go back and reclaim this? Because they're really, I can guarantee you that they are valuable. I know for myself, I spent some time as a monk in Burma, and when I went there, I had I had some pretty grandiose ideas of how my practice was going to develop, and I was gonna have this experience and that experience. It was just greed. That's all it was. Greed for spiritual experiences, and I was having this over and over, and my practice, my formal practice, just kind of crashed. And it got so that I had pretty strong concentration, some of the strongest concentration that I'd had up to that point in time. And then that completely vanished, and I was able to pay attention to the breath, you know, maybe half a breath at a time. And I was really, there was a lot of despair. And in our interviews, we got to ask a question, and we got to report on our practice and then ask a question. And since my formal practice wasn't going anywhere, I would start asking these questions about kind of, you know, stuff that seemed out there. You know, at my cabin up in the woods, very simple little kind of meditator's hut. The toilet was, you know, kind of, and it was an Asian toilet. It was, you know, right, it was a kind of a hole in the floor, and you pour water into it, and that flushes stuff through. And it was, you know, kind of the water source in the kuti. So there would often be ants that would be coming in there and going down to the water. And some of them would get flushed down when I would pour the water in to flush it. And one day, kind of out of boredom, I just asked the abbot during my interview with my question. I'm like, I'm not responsible for these ants, right? And he's like, oh no, you are responsible for them. You're karmically responsible for them. And I was like, oh. So I went back up there, and initially it was like, I'm like, well, what am I supposed to do? I asked him, and he's like, well, maybe you take the brush. Do you have a brush for a cleaning brush? Maybe you take the cleaning brush and you scoop them out. I'm kind of like, every time I go to the bathroom, I'm going to scoop them out? That seems crazy. So I go back, and initially I probably was killing some ants for a little while after that. And then I was scooping them out with a fair amount of resentment and resistance to it, you know. And then over time, something just kind of shifted for me. And I started to see this in other ways, not just with the ants and the toilet there, but with all the life there and the fragility of life and how beings really crave life and how valuable it is and how fleeting it is. And fragile, incredibly fragile. Here in the West, I think we don't see that as clearly, right? Somebody gets sick, we tend to blame them for it, right? Or somebody gets injured, well, what did you do wrong? Well, you probably shouldn't have done that. You know? We keep everybody locked up in hospitals, skilled nursing facilities, retirement homes. Let's keep those people out of the, we don't want to see them, you know? But over time, it really changed things for me a lot. Started to have, really gain kind of this reverence for life and for living beings, and became much more careful about that, and really started noticing that. And then not just with this first precept, but it started to extend it to the other precepts. Just noticing much more closely, what was my motivation when I would say something? You know, was it grief? Was I, oh yeah, there was a little, it was like this hint of wanting to show this other monk up. Yeah, or there was a little bit of hostility there in the not in the words themselves. If you had to, saw them written down, the words would be could be fine, but there was this little bit of oomph there, you know, sticking it to them. So just seeing this kind of thing more closely. And then as I started to notice this more closely and pay closer and closer attention to my behavior and to my actions, as I started to do this, the mind started to settle. There was just a much greater sense of ease that came with that. My mind became much more untroubled. And with that, my concentration started to come back. And this time, I didn't throw out the precepts when the concentration came. I had them to support me in the deepening of the practice there. I think it's something that tends to get kind of glossed over or dismissed here. We tend to think, oh, you know, I don't kill anybody. I'm not killing anybody. And that's great. I'm serious. That's not... There are communities, even here in the Bay Area, where it's not... That cannot be taken for granted. You know? There are households where that cannot be taken for granted, even here in Marin County. Okay? So, either killing or extreme violence, domestic violence in one form or another, abuse. And then there are parts of the world where not killing people, that is... Boy, if everybody could simply agree to that one precept, it would be a radically different world. So I want to encourage also skillful reflection around the precepts. What they do as we start to work with them is they give us a little bit of a kind of a, they give us a microscope to look at our actions with. You know, a microscope, first you see it at the regular level, and then once you get it focused in, then you turn the thing so it's at higher zoom, higher magnification, and then you turn the different tuning thing because it's at the, you know, more subtle level, and then you can see more clearly the things on a more microscopic level. Well, that's really true with the mind and heart as well. And so over time, we can really develop this for ourselves. And as we develop this, there's really just a tremendous amount of opportunity for the deepening of practice available to us. I was a novice monk, and we took the 10 precepts. And I had to get together with all the other novices, and one evening a week we'd get together and recite the 10 precepts. And around the time of the kind of bathroom thing and my awakening around that, around the ants and things like that, I would come to my interviews, and the abbot was my preceptor. So I would tell him, you know, I violated the precepts, I killed some living beings, and I need to retake the precepts. And so we would do this, and it's this kind of call and response thing, and you retake the precepts, and then that's it. And I'd do my vows, and I'd be done with my interview, and I'd go on my way. And it got so that I was retaking the precepts every 2, 3, 4 days, something like that. The abbot, there are certain levels of violation of the precepts. You know, there's certain things like if you kill another person, that's an offense that will get you kicked out of the monastic order. You cannot stay in the monastic order or return to the monastic order in this lifetime. I think having sexual intercourse with another being gets you kicked out. Stealing something worth X amount of gold or silver gets you kicked out. And I think the other one, I think the fourth one, that or these offenses is a, creating a schism in the Sangha, something like that. He was interested in knowing, you know, he wanted to know that, but there was no judgment about me having broken these precepts. There just didn't feel to be any. And I, you know, as I told you, I had many opportunities to see this. He saw them as a protection, not in some kind of magical way, but in the way that as I was engaged with them and engaging with them, he saw that as a protection, as something that would lead to less and less harm for myself and would therefore lead to the deepening of my practice and the deepening of insight and wisdom. So that's really, that's available. This is available to all of us. You know, just take some engagement with it, or some further engagement with it. If you want to, I was going to offer some suggestions, but I think what I'll do is I won't do that now. I may take a couple quick questions, and then maybe we do something in small groups, where you all talk with yourselves about how you might want to work with it, what your understanding is of it, and how you might want to work with it. Are there any questions before we break into small groups?
Yes. Do you, because I'm kind of new at this,
sure.
Can you please restate the five precepts
Absolutely.
That you first mentioned, please?
And thank you for asking that question on behalf of the whole group. So, I undertake the training to refrain from intentionally taking life. I undertake the training to refrain from taking that which is not given. I undertake the training to refrain from misuse of sexuality and the senses. I undertake the training to refrain from speech that is false, divisive, harsh, or meaningless. And I undertake the training to refrain from intoxicants which lead to carelessness. Okay, why don't we get together, break out into groups of four. I want to encourage you, especially people who've been here for a while, spread yourselves out so that we get some interspersing here. People get to interact with some people that you may not have interacted with. Groups of four, so get in your groups and then I'll give you some additional direction. Silence is the part without the speaking. There we go. Okay. All right. So, why don't we take maybe we'll take, say, 20 minutes in the small groups. So each person will have the chance to speak for a few minutes and to share your understanding of the precepts and or confusion about it, something that you understand about it, something that confuses you about it, some place that you want to explore about it more. Does that sound good?
Excellent.
Okay. Make sure that each person has a chance to speak. So initially what's going to happen is one person's going to speak for, say, a couple minutes, and then we'll move to a second person and so on and so forth. After each person has had a chance to speak, then you can have conversation amongst yourselves. Sound good? And please say your name. If you want, I can. Would it be helpful if I rang the bell after 2 to 3 minutes? Okay, I'll do that. One person goes first, and then we'll go clockwise after that. Necessarily what somebody else said, but share your own experience of being in the group or something that struck you, things like that.
Just briefly, you talked about intention. The thing about being ethical is you try to do your best. Some things are difficult, like right speech can be a lifelong practice, right? But you do your best, and there is some kind of release about that. If you feel like you're doing your best, there's a lot more peace involved. Because it's like I like to say, it's very hard to meditate after a day of raping and pillaging. or so I've heard. So it's very hard to settle down or have any kind of serenity or peace if you've been behaving unethically, because the remorse is really a bear.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I don't know if I really need this, but the ethical treatment of others, somewhere, I think it was in Teresa Delmas' book, 85% of the Buddhist teachings were about ethical treatment of others, and only about 15% of it was about mind training, and that was powerful to me. And of course, the 5 precepts are a pretty clear description of the fundamentals on how to treat others ethically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, my senses were all on the path, meaning somewhere on the path. There may be an endpoint, but you know whether we'll ever get there. And it's a relativity issue. Like, okay, I maybe I blew it this time, but I'm getting better. Whatever the thing may be.
Mm-hmm. Anybody on this side?
I like the idea of the positive when it comes to precepts.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I have been thinking about was the fact that if you do all those things with a sense of kindness and view your life with kindness, that it's kind of an antidote to all the precepts.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can have that, for me it's a very felt sense, And of course, there's always the possibility you have this kindness here, and then there's that little that makes motives. But if you really, what's that felt sense? Mm-hmm. And looking for the kindness in the moment.
Right. Barbara?
Well, I was really glad that you made that emphasis of in having your mindfulness, being aware of the precepts, really can make you more mindful. And I also found that if I am aware of the precepts, I can also be aware of the suffering that the breaking precepts might cause, or if I've already broken a precept, the suffering that it has caused. Mm-hmm. And I find that very helpful in terms of just conditioning my mind, so that's more of a mind training.
Yeah, it's really a very effective feedback loop. For the practice, for working with the mind and heart, and the places where we get stuck and try to get things and all that kind of thing.
I think one of the aspects of the precepts is, or one of the causes of not following the precepts, is being caught in your own opinions. Because in speech with somebody else, this election is a great example.
Mm-hmm.
You can get caught up in your own opinions about this election and talk to somebody who may have an opposite opinion in a way that you might be causing them harm. And you can justify that because you're right. And they're wrong, and so to know that most thoughts and most things are just opinions helps in not getting too carried away with certain kinds of speech.
It's very true. Yeah, the election is very fertile ground for practice. You know, this is, there's a lot of opinions and a lot of I was talking about how the precepts are not about right and wrong, you know, they're about engaging with where is the mind and heart. Well, you can see, if you want to pay close attention, you can see where the mind and heart is in any given moment there. And I want to point out a couple things, then we'll get to you in a sec. One thing is around right speech. Is speech false? So, I mean, the Buddha used that as a litmus test. If it was not completely true, he said it wasn't, you shouldn't say it. Divisive. Am I using speech in any way to say this is right, that's wrong, this person's good, that person's bad, you know, those kinds of things. Not to say that we can't speak about injustice in the world or about danger and places where real harm is being caused, and like you're saying, when the opinions that we're taking on get so strong there, that's something to be careful about. Another thing about the election is, if we look at undertaking the third precept, undertaking the training to refrain from misuse of sexuality and the senses, are we getting, and I noticed this in myself, some amount of turning on the computer every day to see what's the latest thing that this candidate said or did, you know, for my kind of titillation, you know, getting some kind of thrill out of that. Did this person really say that? Did they do this? What did they do this time? What are they going to do next time? Keep checking back, you know. One point I caught myself reading the same article as it had been updated 3 times during the day. It's like, okay, time for a little rest. So, you want to? No, if you can, it's really helpful for people, for people with hearing aids and things like that.
I think first of all, I want to say thanks for rearranging your life on the dining room. And I was, you know, as we were kind of contemplating the precepts, I started to think about the right speech and, you know, giving what's not given to you. And I kind of came to the, I see how that can operate in human relations, you know. the codependency, if you will, or taking something from somebody that's either coerced from them or fishing for a response of affection or manufacturing something to a scenario to get your needs met by something that wasn't freely given, yet mm-hmm. you're trying to manufacture it. So.
All kinds of ways in which this happens. Mm-hmm. So many ways in which this happens. Lucia, is this really quick?
Well, what I wanted to say.
Can you say something? Okay.
Yeah. What I've come to realize is that these do not stand alone. They dovetail.
Oh.
You can't, I mean, and that raises a lot of questions, too, in my mind about each one of them.
Yeah.
They all fit together. You can't not train for one and then let the rest of them go. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, they really, I think they go well together, and I also think you may be getting at it. I would say they don't necessarily just dovetail, but they overlap. You know, they're intertwined. And you guys, kind of as you're saying, you can't really tease one apart from the other and say, well, I'm not going to pay attention to this one, but I'll pay attention to the others, because it's interrelated there. It's involved in that way. So just a few comments as we move towards closing. I really wholeheartedly encourage you to engage with them in your life in some kind of regular way. I also encourage you to keep, perhaps keep some kind of boundary around it, that you're going to pay attention to speech from when you wake up in the morning until the first hour of your day, something like that. That's when you're going to pay closest attention. Or pay close attention to not taking what's not freely given. If you notice an area that's slippery for you in conversation, for example, or with things that are left out on the counter at work when people bring in treats, or at the potluck, you know, or, oh, look at the brownies, I love the brownies. And take three of the brownies and there are only a dozen. There's 20 more people in line to, you know, whoops. Yeah. All of these kinds of things, just noticing them. And I want to really also encourage not using these to judge yourself, but just to see what's the quality of the mind and heart in this moment, so that it's really more about learning. And over time, trusting the feedback loop that we can do that. So we'll move into closing now, and why don't we go into quiet for just a moment, and then we'll have the metta cards.